loving you isn't the right thing to do. But how can I ever change things that I feel? If I could,
welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It is now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest in this episode is sponsor Kevin Lawton from thecrowdfundingrevolution.com. Now, we were talking over the break about smarmy, hubris-filled people, and I wanted to actually have a discussion about this because it's one of those natural elements that you will encounter when you talk about things that are outside of the mainstream. I mean, anybody can talk about American Idol or X Factor and America's Got Talent and any other mainstream distraction that you want, and you will never be criticized or attacked or called an idiot for only consuming that content and never thinking for yourself. In the main. However, if you do the opposite and you choose to talk about things that matter, all those people who spend their entire life obsessed with things that don't matter will insult you, will fire you from your job, will report you as suspicious activity and things like this. And it reminds me of the Matrix training program with the woman with the red dress. You're looking at the woman with the red dress. You're looking at the woman with the red dress. Suddenly she's gone and there's an agent right there with a gun in your face. Training program's there to teach you one thing, ladies and gentlemen. You are either unplugged, like one of us, or you are potentially an agent of the system. Kevin, welcome back.
All right, it's great to be back again.
How do you like that analogy I just throw out there?
Well, unfortunately, it's kind of valid. You see it everywhere, right? Everyone runs into that in the truth movement, spending all their energy and dissipating into people who pretty much just kind of vampire the energy out of people with good intent. So it's one of the big lessons of the universe people need to learn, right, is to either how to deal with those people or how to just bug out, essentially. Don't let the people vampire your energy. And also, like, it's great practice too, though, because some of these people, they come out with these smarmy comments about how you must be, you know, crazy and idiotic. And if you want to practice your ability to create and throw thought grenades into their foxhole, there's some good people to do it with. And if you can figure out how to frag those people to, you know, just really obliterate them in front of people, then I think you're off to a good start.
What's ironic is that they're not bright enough to realize that they're being obliterated, and they're not honest enough to admit when they're wrong. The best you can hope for is to outnumber them in a bullying sense of the word. I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, this is just what I've discovered. You can't win a conversation with somebody like that, okay? You can only... what was it Mark Twain said? He says, never argue with somebody who is an idiot because they will beat you with their experience.
Right, yeah. Something equivalent was never argue with the crazy people because it's hard for people outside to differentiate who is who.
Hey, so, oh my God, that's actually a really good quote as well, because I see people... like myself, arguing with people who are, say, like, for example, chemtrail deniers, And then you have these third parties who come in and say that they don't want to look at what either me or the chemtrail denier are saying, because the mere fact that we're having an argument over something is a put off that creates confusion that prevents people wanting to investigate further and figure out what's actually going on, because they don't know who to believe, because they refuse to look at any of the evidence and make their own decision and their own thoughts about it.
Yeah, you know, this actually is, this is really interesting topic to me, because I have this idea I call the one-step activism. And the idea here is that, look, you know, if you were, if you just ask somebody, you know, take this step one foot of distance, you know, that's no problem. Well, how about 3 feet? Maybe not too problem. Well, I'll take this Olympic size jump, you know, do 27 feet, whatever. That's not going to happen. And they're not going to expend the energy to even try. You got, I think the one of the critical pieces for activists, they have to realize that people are only going to take that one simple step. And so really the key is to find out, where is someone in the scheme of things? You know, what's their level of consciousness? What are they aware about? And then just give them one little thing, and maybe not even in the direction of pure information, but sometimes just really kind of like, do you watch these movies, Yes Men? Where these guys spook conferences. You can kind of be a yes man type. Like if someone's, you know, doesn't believe about chemtrails, then you just, you say, you know, are your kids involved in that, that chemtrail drawing contest? I heard you can win like a scholarship, you know? And they're like, what? Yeah. Whoever can draw the most beautiful chemtrails, you know? And they're like, what are chemtrails? Oh, it's just these, you know, just these, things left behind by planes, you know? And then you go, and then, you know, you start talking to them about it, and you realize, well, let me send you some photos of chemtrails. And of course, you send them some links from some chemtrail conspiracy site or something. So the thing is to get them involved without saying no or reacting first, and then let them actually go find it. It's kind of it sort of goes back to the way I opened with the Buckminster Fuller about, you know, forget trying to teach somebody, just give them a tool, and then it'll lead to a new way of thinking.
May I offer something supplementary to this? What was her name? Dr. Rima Labor from the DrRimaTruthReports.com. I told her once that, you know, you need to tell people a certain amount of time, and she actually corrected me and gave me the actual number. It takes 7 people to tell you this exact same thing, 7 different people, mind you, before you will abandon a really strongly held belief, right? So it occurred to me, I have to play my part. If I see a mother with her child's head next to an iPad with wireless signals shooting through its brain, and I go up and say to her, excuse me, you do realize that's dangerous for your baby. And she goes, bugger off, you're a crazy conspiracy theorist. I'll just go, okay, no problem. I hope 6 other people tell you the same thing I did and that you wake up. But there's a chance. There's just a little chance that I might be that 7th person. And there is a certainty, an absolute certainty, that if myself and all of us don't say anything to her, that there will never be a 7th person.
Absolutely. And you never know if you're 2 or 3 or what have you. So the
answer is just play your part, ladies and gentlemen.
Do it. Do it, yeah. And, you know, interesting, that brings up another way of using high leverage as activism, where if you're, instead of going out and protest, maybe you should just get 7 people together and come in at different times and tell some storefront owner about X, Y, or Z, you know, either going to take your property or, you know, going to raise your tax. If you did that, you could actually play that 7-person thing on them by having 7 what's seemingly randomly people tell them the same thing. I'll have to think about that for future activism.
Yeah.
That would go with my bankster outfit thing, you know? Yeah. If every one of the events, there's a couple new banksters coming and telling them, hey, you know, it's no problem, man. I'm going to end up buying, after we bulldoze your property, we're going to buy it up, man. 10 cents on the dollar. Yes, if enough bankster-looking people tell somebody that, they might actually believe it.
you know, it'd be great to actually go to like city council meetings or congressional hearings or public meetings and things like that, where the officials are actually sitting there laying out economic policy, you know, trying to woo the crowd and what have you. And then you just stand up and you ask questions and pretend to be one of these banks to scum, and you just say, "Excuse me, sir, I love your legislation because it'll allow me to invest in this country and take most of its strategic assets for pennies on the dollar. I believe that you, sir, are going to be a great leader for New Zealand." You know, that kind of thing. Just encourage them to steal and destroy the country and act like it's a good thing. But use real words. You know, don't use these smarmy BS, oh, we're going to create jobs kind of stuff. Just really get in there and go for the jugular.
Absolutely. I think people should do this. We should amp it up a little bit, amp up the game, you know. I mean, it's interesting how much people – one of the problems, obviously, we've been inundated our entire life with a bunch of pseudoscience and pseudo-everything. And, you know, so many people are obviously acting within that system that it's hard for other people to stretch a little, you know, stretch away from that model because, hey, everyone's doing it. And, you know, if I jump outside that, I look like a freak, whatever. But, you know, even in finance, so you mentioned the banksters and all that. I mean, so I was thinking about taking an MBA at some point, and I just couldn't wrap my mind around learning something from, you know, force-fed, fagua type pseudoscience from people who are teaching me, you know, about something that's like 50, 100-year-old thinking. But I met this guy who was just all amped up with arrogance about how, you know, how smart he was, and he was going to be, you know, working on these derivatives and all this kind of crap after got out. And I said, you know, that's interesting. Do you know Black-Scholes formula, which is what's used for options pricing? And pretty much every financial transaction on Earth can be mapped into Black-Scholes, unfortunately. But he's like, yeah, I studied Black-Scholes. And I said, you know, so Black-Scholes is a formula. Let's just say that every Greek is effectively a coefficient for some kind of part of the formula. And I said, what's the Greek for liquidity? And he looked at me, he's like, what do you mean? I said, well, you have these coefficients for everything, right? Well, what's the one for liquidity in a market? And he said, he just thought about it a minute. It's like short-circuited almost. And he's like, I don't know. I don't think there is one. It's like, yeah, exactly. It doesn't model reality. And so, you know, you're already studying garbage, right? And so the whole bankster system needs to create fake volume, fake liquidity, or whatever you want to call it, making markets, right, in order to even make a mathematical function approximate what actually happens in reality. And this guy didn't even know that. And he's talking about, you know, using this formula to create derivatives and whatnot. And so this is where we are, in the sense that even people who are ostensibly, you know, cream of the crop, whatever that means, going to, you know, really big name schools, which I don't want to mention, but they sound like Wharton, and they, you know, and they think that they really got the, you know, the bull by the horns, and they really are just fed garbage pseudoscience. You know, it's kind of a bummer to see, and that's why it just gives me that much more motivation to think that the next system really is. There's no saving. The existing one just doesn't even work for us anymore. We need to forget about the people. But however, I do. What you said dials me back into realizing that we shouldn't forget it altogether, because we can use the language and the words of the old system in a way to actually activate people.
Mm. Well, who was it that accused me of something? Oh, yeah, a rap artist named Luca. He should have called himself Loser, because it was a more appropriate name for this piece of trash. But he was like telling me that... accusing me of being some kind of a paid shill is like, it's not an accident that Vinny's gotten so popular, you know. It's like, of course it's not an accident. Look at how awesome I am, Loser. You know? Look at how hard I work. But the element here that I found very interesting is that even people within the truth movement fight with other people within the truth movement. You know, you cannot avoid it. There's always infighting. There's always arguing. There's always these people who say that they're awake that are simply and patently, obviously incapable of thought.
You know, I actually discovered this phenomena in the 80s being an open source author. So apparently it sort of maps into a lot of different systems. And in fact, in the open source community, you'll find that for any one piece of software, there's probably, you know, 3 or 4 or 20 different applications that do fairly similar things, none of which were finished to 100%, of course. And that's one of the problems of that. But then within the community, they're all firing bullets at each other. And I came to the conclusion that it's probably not a good idea to fire at people in neighboring foxholes. You know, when there's a war on, I'm thinking the guy next to you might be a better friend than an enemy. And I think that, you know, we really need to get that message out to activists as well as open source people that, you know, not everyone has to think exactly alike. In fact, it's probably a good thing that we don't. But, you know, you might want to look at the big picture, you know, before go fighting with each other. And I think, I mean, how fun must that be for the establishment, though? You know, they're out there, you know, jazzing people with all kinds of, you know, shills and whatnot, trolls. And I almost wondered, do they even need to, right? You know, in some ways, people kind of troll each other. So, by the way, I've got a whole bunch of other kind of topics that are sort of interesting to me that I think really aren't being talked about.
We still have many, but I wanted to quickly add an interjection before we go into that, because you know what you said just reminded me of. There's an episode of Family Guy where the Griffins get accused by their neighbors of being of Stewie Griffin being a crack baby, right? So social services takes him, puts him in another home, and it's a home where they have like 5 other unwanted children, and they're all of different races and cultures and what have you, okay? And they like want Stewie to join them, and they go, Stewie, come complete our rainbow. You know, they're like, they're all lying in a rainbow shape on the thing. And he goes, I have a better idea. Why don't we play swallow the stuff under the sink? And and towards the end of it, Stewie realizes that he can actually become the most powerful child in the house by getting all of these kids who are of different races and cultures to fight with each other. And at the very end, he's being carried away by his dad to go home for real. And all these kids are fighting each other. And as he's being carried away, he shrieks out, dance, puppets, dance.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's kind of how it is when you get to the wrong crew of people. And, you know, that kind of does dial into a favorite topic of mine. And that is that, you know, we have all these things like LinkedIn and, you know, obviously Twitter, Facebook, and all these millions of social networking tools. You know what the world really needs? And this is just absolutely a critical piece, I think, of tomorrow's cryptocurrency, is a credibility network. We need a way that we can have like a tapestry of people on it that can assess other people. And you only can assess so many people so that people don't just, you know, do the LinkedIn thing where you have like 500 people or 1,000 and you have no idea. You can't remember who these people are. But a way that you really know who somebody is, and you're Vinny Eastwood's willing to vouch for, you know, Guy X. And if Guy X turns out to be a real, you know, crap head, then by the way, you lose credibility too, right? So if we had something like that, then when it comes to events, it comes to when you're blogging online, to finding out if someone real or not, you know, if you want to assess, it's sort of like Yelp. Do you have Yelp in New Zealand for restaurants?
No.
Okay. Well, anyway, it's a restaurant crowdsourced restaurant rating service. And it actually, despite all the fraud that goes on, it actually kind of has error correction built in, and it works. It works pretty well. If we had that kind of service for people, then you could actually bolt that on to all these chat rooms and blogs, and you could build an app so you could find out who's at some kind of a mixer or some kind of an activist event. And you could really screen out not only stooges, but you could just screen out people that aren't really stooges, but they're just kind of douchebags.
Well, you know, you can never fully keep infiltrators out, and that's what the quote unquote Illuminati are famous for. It's infiltrating. You know, I mean, that's why they call them traitors, because they infiltrate. Well,
I think the key is I mean, obviously, that's the there's no perfect solution. I think the key is to have a system where.
By the way, go ahead. I have a cunning solution for how to not lose credibility.
Okay.
Never claim to have any.
That's a good place to start, right?
Then you can't lose it, can you?
The thing is, by claiming that, you would probably gain credibility, though.
Exactly. Which is why it is an incredibly cunning solution.
I think that explains your show.
Yeah. You can not only never lose credibility, but you can never not gain it either.
Have you kept track of any of these alternative, I call them socioeconomic models, like Venus Project and Zeitgeist? And
I was involved in its inception when Zeitgeist 3 screened in Auckland. No, sorry, Zeitgeist 2. I was the only person allowed into the theater without purchasing a ticket because I'm Vinnie frickin' Eastwood.
That's something, man. Yeah.
Even the organizers had to pay.
There's got to be perks, man. That's kind of interesting. What do you think about Zeitgeist?
Anything that says we need a system for everybody rather than saying, actually, bro, you personally need to take responsibility for your own life and go out and solve problems yourself the way you see fit in walking with spiritual awareness and doing God's work. Basically, anything that says anything other than that, not terribly interested in, to be honest.
That's a good way to look at it. I kind of feel the same a lot. I mean, Venus Project and Zeitgeist to me have a lot of good ideas, and because I have the philosophy of not, shooting people in the next foxhole, I never say anything bad. I feel like a little bit they have a direction that's pointed toward a sort of scientific dictatorship, but at the end of the day, just like you said, inspiring people for responsibility and new ideas is a good thing. In fact, actually, someone recently said, I have all these ideas and I'm presenting to people, and they said, well, that sounds like socialism. And to be honest with you, it probably sounds more like anarchism. But unfortunately, people can't pattern match properly. And so I said, no, it's not anything to do with socialism. It's probably the opposite. Like, what do you mean? Like, well, you think about it. Anarchism is freedom derived from personal responsibility. And socialism is just give up your freedom and personal responsibility and hope someone maintain, to a few elite people and hope they deal with it responsibly. And that's not going to happen.
Hope that somebody else can run my life better than I can.
Yeah. Like, how the heck is that the same? I don't get that. But anyway.
Why do people go out and protest in favor of socialism? What the hell? I mean,
if I give up everything, you'll protect me. That's going to happen.
How's that working out for you, for your protester who's getting pepper sprayed for absolutely no reason? How's authoritarianism working out for you? And you're protesting in favor of it in the meantime while you're dealing with the consequences of supporting it in the first place.
I'm sorry I got it in your eyes, but we have to protect the public.
Yeah. For your protection! Yeah. Oh, my God, I feel so protected now.
Thanks for the handcuffs, too.
My wrists were feeling all soft and supple and stuff, and this is much better. This is perfect.
We prevented a thought felony. Today, actually, was in South election, South Africa, they had the elections, and the Ubuntu Party was running in that election. So it's kind of interesting. They're another one of these alternative models, if you know Michael Tellinger, maybe.
Yeah, I've had Michael on the show a number of times, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic guy. He's just a really articulate guy, And again, it's a set of ideas, and you don't have to buy into all of them. It's just great that people are thinking about responsibility and actually contributing instead of extracting. And he seems to be friends with another model, which is the New Earth Project or New Earth Nation, as they seem to be transitioning to, with Sasha Stone. Have you talked to him?
No, I don't think so.
Probably a great. If he'll get on the show, it'd be a great guest.
Do you know him? Can you hook me up, brother?
I don't know him. I'll ask Michael to get a hold of him because I gotta say, I mean, I digest a lot of content. I think that Sasha Stone is probably one of the most articulate humans I've ever heard in my life. That guy is just brilliant, man.
Man after my own heart.
Yeah, and you know what? Someone, it's interesting because he's so articulate and he's so, you know, connected on all kinds of levels, whether it's spiritual or just reality, whatever. Someone tried to pin him with that. You know, you sound like a guru. And I really loved his response. He said, "Bah, I'm a guru slayer. We don't like gurus around here. We think for ourselves." That's, you know, that's a man of my own kind. But, you know, those are sort of some of the projects that I've seen. And I'd say that I think the North Project and the Ubuntu guys are probably a little closer to aligned to what I have in mind, in the sense that, you know, they don't propose, like with the Venus Project, they seem to want to, you know, put sensors everywhere on the Earth and pipe all that information into a centralized computer grid, you know, run by smart people. And don't worry, they're smarter than us. So they'll run all the sensors and allocate resources and stuff like that. And until, you know, in my mind, I think centralization and its ugly cousin intermediation are some of the worst possible, you know, sort of attack vectors for corruption.
By the way, Kevin, can you name me a single society throughout the entirety of history that used centralization as its, you know, structural organism, whatever, that didn't wind up either starving to death or being exterminated in war?
Short list. Can't think of any.
Yeah, that's because they don't freaking exist. This is what centralization does. This is what hierarchy, power, and control, and this is the reason why psychopaths crave it so and always reintroduce it and repackage it every single century, even every decade now. In fact, they're running out of game plan here. They're running out of new tricks. They've been using the same old tricks for thousands of years, and we're suddenly starting to realize that the tricks in the first freaking place, and they still keep using them, and people still keep freaking falling for them. It's unbelievable.
Here's a dilemma they have. After you've centralized everything and you run out, what do you do?
I don't know. Who was it? I think it was Ronald Reagan who said the problem with socialism is eventually you run out of everybody else's money.
Exactly. You know, you had this great guest, Kevin Annett, or Onnit, how do you say
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, Annett, yeah.
Annett, and he said something really interesting. He was researching and he was reading some old, you know, I don't know, religious papers or whatever, and they were saying how, I think it was from the Jesuits, they were saying how they realized you have to brutalize children from 0 to 7 years old in order to beat it out of them, because children just inherently do not accept hierarchy or being working slaves. That's a reality that's just not inherent in a human being. You have to brutalize them, and then on the other side, you give them goodies to kind of attract them. It's the carrot and stick thing.
Yeah, well, and incidentally, it's the same way you break a horse.
Yeah.
Kevin, we're coming to break now. Let's hold that thought. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. This episode is sponsored by Kevin, thecrowdfundingrevolution.com. Back in a second. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Can I walk here beside you? Can I speak your name? Can I just be here? Can I speak in anger? Can I speak in shame? Can I just be here? I'm a lover, I'm a winner, I'm a fighter. Come and set your soul. Just
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment now with Kevin Lawton from thecrowdfundingrevolution.com. You can get the book off of my website, thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. And bear in mind, if you do want to support this broadcast, advertisers contribute just a little amount, but the bulk of the funding comes from your donations and subscriptions. This is listener-funded in the main, and even the people who advertise on this, some of them don't pay very much or give me much for their ads, but because they're good people with independent businesses that aren't involved with the scumbaggery New World Order system that wants to wipe out and exterminate us all, I'll give it to them anyway, you know, just because. My very special guest, Kevin Lawton. Welcome back.
Hey, great to be back once again.
Mm-hmm. Now, finally, you had quite a long list of talking points. I wondered which of the ones are you most interested to cover in the final segment here, you know, something juicy, something big, something nasty.
Yeah, well, let's start with capitalism, and then let's wind our way to Burning Man. I think that would be an interesting little pathway.
Yeah, you know, that'd be good, because I've actually envisioned burning some capitalists at the stake before myself.
Well, I went out to Burning Man this last round, and it was quite a trip. You know, we only burned a big, giant wooden figure and a giant flying saucer-shaped structure, but, you know, there could have been bankers on it. You know, the interesting thing we were... Yeah, or actually, why waste the big structure on only one? So we were talking a little bit before the break about, you know, how you essentially have to brutalize people to even make children think that, hey, this hierarchy is actually even a good thing. And really, I got to say, you know, as much as I've been involved in capitalism and startups and the whole bit, you know, it occurs to me, essentially, capitalism is a form of brutalization. It just keeps going past the 7-year mark all the way through most people's lives. You know, like someone was talking recently, like, I want to start my own business, you know? And just, I was kind of joking. I said, you know, just think about the term busyness. That's the idea of capitalism, right? Get you running around so busy, not paying attention that, you know, oh, well, you got to pay your taxes. Okay, well, I'll get that done. Well, I got to get back to my work, you know? That you don't even have time to actually think about what you're doing, you know? And so you end up kind of getting wrapped up into that. And at the end of the day, what is capitalism? Well, it's, you know, all about accumulating more and more capital, right? So then you ask people, okay, well, what's capital? What's money? And I'd say one of my favorite questions is kind of, it's a little bit of an economic geek kind of a thing, but I love to ask people, what is money, right? What do you think it is? And they come up with all this textbook crap about fungibility and, you know, unit accounting and all this stuff. It's nothing to do with that. I mean, if you look at even the founder of some of the schools, like the Austrian School of Economics, people talk about von Mises, but really his mentor, I think the pronunciation's Menger, he actually stated what capitalism and what our view of value exchange is, and that is that value only lives in the minds of people. There is no such thing as a store of value or anything like that. It's just in our minds. And if that's true, then the store of value is just a store in each other, right? But the system's got us running around, you know, chasing these things that they print, which aren't really even money. They don't certainly store any wealth. They don't represent anything other than a unit of debt, unfortunately, a usury-based debt. And so they keep people busy. And I think, like, to extend Kevin Annett's statement about brutalizing kids till they're 7 to live in hierarchy, I think we have to brutalize people until they're about 30 or 40 to make them think that running around being busy all the time, in quotes, working for a living, is a natural thing for a human to even do. And that kind of leads to, you know, I always refer back to my favorite, you know, Buckminster Fuller, but he had this great quote about, you know, we got to get rid of the specious notion that everyone has to earn a living. And at the end of it, you know, he was talking about how one person in 10,000 could come up with such a technological idea that the rest of them don't even need to work. And so he ended with this, which I'd like to read quickly, which is, you know, so we keep inventing jobs because of this false idea that everybody has to be employed at some kind of drudgery because, according to Malthusian Darwinian theory, he must justify his right to exist. So we have inspectors of inspectors, and people making instruments for inspectors to inspect inspectors. The true business of people should be go back to school and think about whatever it is they were thinking about before someone came along and told them they had to earn a living.
Kevin, it's funny you should say justify your existence, because that's what I do and try to do every day, is justify my existence. The problem is, the difference is that I'm justifying my own existence. Nobody else is telling me to justify it.
I think that's a good way to look at it, because really what is, you know, the kind of narcissistic psychopath, right? They're in some ways...
By the way, I'm also a narcissist.
Yeah, a little bit of that's not a bad thing.
Well, not benign narcissism, like, what's his name, Bruce Lee and Muhammad Ali. They were totally full of themselves, you know, I'm the best, or whatever. They were. you know, it's like, that's narcissism. It's pretty much an inability to deny your own awesomeness. Thank you.
No? What a psycho trip that would be, being around, you know, in the ring with somebody, and they're like, I'm the greatest, you know?
Yeah. Well, see, that's the problem with... narcissists versus psychopaths is that I see psychopaths as my natural enemy, because they have all the same characteristics that I do, except they don't have empathy.
Sure.
Right? That's the one thing that I've got in spades that these vipers, these evil scum, don't have, and that makes them my enemy and the enemy of all people.
Yeah, well, that, in a way, that makes them, you know, prime violators of natural law, which is really just a mutual respect. You know, and you see it in every religion and every kind of spiritual thinking. There's some kind of a yin yang or golden rule or whatever, some kind of a thing that really boils down to natural law, which is essentially we have freedom by personal responsibility and, you know, kind of a mutual respect thing. And really, empathy is the missing piece that allows people, unfortunately, to pop out of that model and not live within natural law.
Well, that's why they outlawed E. I think it was back in, was it the 60s or 50s, I think, when they first invented E. I forget. But it didn't stand for ecstasy. It stood for empathy. And it was prescribed for family violence. They give a violent father an E, send him home to his kids. He'd never lay a hand on him again. He just loves him so much. Oh, my God, they're so soft. Oh, my, I love you so much. You can't hurt him. And so they're like, oh, my God, this is helping people to be empathetic and not scumbags. Illegal!
Well, if you invested in Corrections Corp of America, you'd probably be happy they outlawed it, you know. And you know, I joke about those kind of things, but I got to say, back during the first invasion or whatever you want to call it in Iraq, I had a friend, you know, and he kind of saw the war drums beating. And so he goes out and finds some small stock where the company manufactured body bags, you know, and he invested in it and made a nice little pop from the war, because he knew it was coming on, you know. And I'm just thinking, wow, that's a whole different mindset right there. You know, I actually have a friend in prison these days for allegedly selling ecstasy and maybe a few other things. He was, you know, the really unfortunate thing, besides destroying, you know, a really nice person's life, is he was kind of a community leader around a tea house, and he was just probably the most magical guy I've ever met in my life. But I guess, you know, allegedly had a few things on the side. And, you know, here's this guy who really means absolutely nothing. His intent is nothing other than just spreading goodness and enlightening people and making them more healthy. That was really his mission in life. And this guy is like in prison. And, you know, when you see that firsthand, it really, you know, it really hits you, the kind of system that we have, and that we're doing everything we can to take the most high conscious people in the world and throw them in some kind of jail, you know, make money off them. Apparently, it's pretty dismal, but you know, it's kind of where we are now. And that's, you know, just hopefully that just fires people up more to, you know, kind of pop out of this system and build something new, because the old ones just broke, you know?
Yeah. I think whistleblowers are like probably one of the key figures to that. Like in the modern age, the ability to actually really change things and help people to see things for the way they really are. Whistleblowers seem to be the people to look at. And it kind of makes me want to cry because these people have their money, homes, family, friends and careers disappear for defending humanity from scumbaggery. And I'm sitting here getting donations and recognition for doing the same kind of thing, but making way less sacrifice. And I think that's the reality for which I and all of us really should be ashamed. But I don't really feel guilty about it because I interview whistleblowers and I help their voices be heard, merely as an effort to make up for my own failings and lack of self-sacrifice for the greater good. And in so doing, I believe this justifies my existence.
Well, you know, on the other hand, it's hard to be an activist from inside a jail sometimes, too. So, you know, maybe it's good that you're, you know, doing what you're doing. Anyway, as I understand it, you're kind of the alternate media guy in New Zealand, right?
Yeah, so well...
No one else has stepped
there's
up.
There's two types of alternative media. Yeah. There's those who are mainstream alternative media, who only really comment on mainstream media articles. And yes. Then there's new media, which actually talk about the stuff exclusively that the mainstream media never talks about or sidelines or demonizes or issues, which means, unfortunately, you really have to cover everything that they cover as well. But I don't know. It's quite strange, Kevin, in the last... Shoot, how long have I been in this house? I think 5 months, 5 months. My radio in my car has been dead. I haven't listened to any mainstream talk radio. My TV aerial has been dead. I haven't watched any mainstream news. And you know what's funny, Kevin? I don't feel any less informed.
You're probably more informed because you haven't been inundated with such garbage.
Well, it's what Mark Twain said. He said, oh, no. Was it Mark Twain or Thomas Jefferson? I think it was Jefferson, actually. He said, those who only read newspapers are less informed than those who read nothing at all. And the Twain quote was, if you don't read the newspaper, you're uninformed. If you do read the newspaper, you're misinformed.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I'm the same as you. I don't do TV, and my only newspapers is I read the headlines when they're sitting in the newspaper box, only for a sort of an entertainment, a dark entertainment. So I read the headlines, and I pretty much know right away what the actual story was just by the headline. But that, you know, I've been kind of reading and figuring out what's going on in the world for most of my life. So you sort of get that skill after a while. But I sort of don't read it the same way people do. And at that, it's just the headline because the rest is garbage anyway, right? The headline's telling you what they're trying to make you think right off the bat. So it's just one of those things that I've had people I know who got out of reading newspapers because they just at some point realized, you know, I'm not getting anything out of this. And I'm just going to pop out of this. So you just cut your subscription to the newspaper and, you know, try to find some other sources. The only thing about that is for a lot of people, it's once you start, there's this sort of ceiling, right, where people hit, where you start learning stuff and then you realize, wow, there's a lot more to learn. So then you go learn that. And then it seems like, you know, for every stone you turn over, there's another 10. And it tires out a lot of people, or they just don't have the wherewithal or bandwidth to do it. So then they kind of tire out and they burn out and they go back. Sometimes they slip back into the old, you know, old reality that they were stuck in before. It's an interesting dynamic to see. So I guess one of the things, though, that I found where it's really effective for waking people up is, this is unfortunate, but when their health goes bad.
Yeah. Or when they get busted by the cops for no good reason. You know what's funny? Here's the irony, Kevin. The worse stuff that happens to you, the more likely you are to wake up and realize there's something wrong. Yeah. In fact, somebody called in my show, I think it might have been last year or maybe 2012. I can't remember when this happened, but they asked me, Vinny, how am I supposed to wake people up? I just don't know how to do it. And I go, well, you could call the police and report them for a crime they didn't commit. And when the cops come, bust into their house, tear up their couches, rip their TV to pieces, shred their stereo system, and then when they don't find anything, still bind them in handcuffs and then take them down to the cells with all the really nasty criminals and take their shoelaces off and their belts and everything like that, and then leave you in there while they make jokes about you just outside your cell and what have you, while you're crying and on the floor and enjoying your suffering, etc. They'll wake up pretty freaking quickly. Or they will be damaged for life, irreparably. Okay, yeah, that's the kind of thing. It's like Ebola. You know, you leave a person with Ebola in the hut for 3 days. They either come out alive or they don't come out at all. Right?
Now that, my friend, is a thought grenade.
It's funny you should mention that, because I've been calling them information grenades. If you're arguing with somebody who's like, basically, you can't argue with them because they're too freaking stupid to listen or look at evidence. What you do is you do the information grenade. You pull the pin, you say something, and then you walk out of the room and you wait for it to blow up in their face later.
Absolutely, yeah. Get them thinking. My favorite thing is to tell somebody something that sounds like what they want to hear. That, oh, you gotta, yeah, I know something about that. Go look this up, and then give them a pointer to something, and then have them find out that, oh, this isn't actually what I thought it was. This is worse. Right. Instead of having to tell them, then they end up finding out on their own. So,
unfortunately, that's a constant realization for a lot of truthers. Yeah, it's a lot worse than I thought it was.
it's an everyday occurrence, you know.
Yeah. It's daily, you know, like because your understanding of how fracked up everything is gets expanded on a daily basis. Awareness does not set you free, ladies and gentlemen, nor does knowledge. If anything, it burdens and weighs you down for the rest of your freaking existence. Enjoy.
Favorite bumper sticker actually was the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off.
Yeah, that's true. Speaking of bumper stickers, I saw a really good one. Do you know about Holdens and Fords and how there's a big kind of rivalry between these two car manufacturers and fans of them and that kind of thing?
Not aware of that.
No. Okay, well, anyway, in New Zealand, all the police cars are Holdens, right? And I saw a Ford driving along and it had a bumper sticker saying, "Only pigs drive Holdens."
Actually, that could be kind of a marketing thing, too. You know, I mentioned Burning Man earlier. We could talk a little bit about Burning Man, because that was... I hope people have had a chance to go to that, and if they don't, that they do in the future, because you really can't understand what a new system is like until you just live in it, you know, until you really get there and you spend enough time seeing other people live in a different system. And there are, you know, I think Burning Man's changing, or there's other, well, the worldwide events are sort of like it, I understand, but that it really changes people's perspective, because, you know, you go there and there's this huge line to get in. It takes hours to get in, and it's like capitalism outside the fence and anarchy inside. You know, you got to go through this long line so you can get checked to make sure you paid your few $100 ticket, you know. And then after the capitalism ends, you get in, and it's just this new world of you know, people's, there's no commerce at all. You're not able to sell anything. So that leaves people with essentially giving out stuff. So you're supposed to find something you like to give out and, you know, and exchange with people. So what happens is, instead of, you know, people trying to set up businesses, they actually find something they're passionate about. And they do that. You know, people set up bars and they set up tents with yoga and tents for meditation. And there's even like a TEDx event at Burning Man where people talk about some pretty interesting stuff. But then, you know, there's this nightlife of just complete anarchy. It's like a combination. It's hard to describe. It's like a combination of being in a, you know, sort
a dance club and a hippie commune.
Yeah. Combined with Mad Max.
Oh yeah,
that's movie.
That's totally, you know, right.
It's you know, it's out there. It's on a desert playa, so there's, and the wind picks up. So you have these sandstorms, and imagine this: there's these roads that are sort of rings, and then there's spikes, these spoken wheels that kind of connect as well. That their roads are just made out of the just you know, cordon off areas, whatever. And there's no directionality on the road. So other than the art cars, which drive around and blast out techno music and have hot chicks on them and stuff, there's really no directionality on the road. So there's bikes and there's people walking and art cars. The sandstorms are coming up. It's dark, and you know, you see just the glow of people's lights and all kinds of stuff. Techno's blasting out, and you're thinking, at some point it hit me, geez, there's no directions, there's no like left side and right side or whatever, and people are kind of just careening around each other and, you know, near missile central all the time, but yet generally there's no, you don't really hit anybody. And it just hits you at some point that, you know, maybe we don't actually need people telling us where the stop sign is and the light and the, you know, the dashed lines and, you know, where you can pass and what the speed limit is and all this stuff. It's just, it's a place where you can go where you just pop outside rules, and it's left for people to have this thing called personal responsibility. And I got to tell you, man, it, you know, there's always a couple douches slipping here and there, but it's actually a really amazing place. And the people are, you know, maybe because they're in a different space, but when people don't have rules, they oddly enough revert to this thing where you actually absorb some responsibility.
If there's no rules and they see problems and other people needing help, they're far more likely to go and help them because they know that there's no actual authority that's going to help them. So if they see it, they do something. It's kind of like it's like a weird interpretation of the See Something, Say Something campaign run by the Department of Homeland Security
at Walmart. Yeah, you know, I think you're right. I think you know, in the regular world, wherever, it's not really regular, but this world we live in, people sort of become immunized, and you know, will drive by someone in need, right? And, you know, somebody else with a cell phone will call for help or something. But there, you're absolutely right. It's a different mindset. In fact, it's such a different way of living that when people come back, there are some people who are more sensitive because it just resonates so strongly with them that they become depressed when they get back, and they have to go through Burning Man decompression events to sort of ease their way back into this capitalist or crapitalist society we live in. And it's kind of interesting. It's a little easier for me for whatever reason. I guess I'm just sort of an observationalist, but they literally, people, it affects them deeply because they realize the rest of their life sucks. And, you know, and then they go there and they feel at home. It, you know, it's kind of funny. I'm it's at night and I'm riding my bike around and I'm trying to, like, you know, careen around people and not hit people or get deafened by all the techno music playing and stuff. And I get kind of so, you know, into the, it's like you fall back into your pattern of, like, you know, kind of stressing and trying to get somewhere fast. And this guy comes biking by and he's so happy and he goes, "Wow, man, have a good Burning Man," you know? And I realized, you know, I'm bringing my tension there. You know, I'm riding around, and for that moment, maybe I'm kind of the douche, you know? You know, people are trying to have a good vibe, and here I am bringing my kind of city-esque vibe in there, you know, and you lose that quickly, but it takes a little bit for the walls to kind of drop down. And
when in Rome.
Absolutely, man. It's so I can see when the, you know, you've got these, whether it's the Zeitgeist or the Ubuntu or the New Earth Nation people, you know, they really have their finger on something, on creating something completely new where it's a balance of responsibility and, you know, contribution. Is it, because it happens. I mean, people go out there and, you know, you talked about, I think maybe it was before the call started officially, but you know, crowdfunding and, you know, so to some extent people can have a feeling like being a mooch. I mean, you could literally be a professional mooch out there. You could go with nothing, and there's so many people giving out stuff. You could mooch out there. But even that, with that dynamic, it almost doesn't matter because there are so many people giving their passion out. They just, people want a chance to actually give something out. It's really strange. I mean, you get, you know, you think people are trying to save all their money in capitalism and, you know, pinch pennies and whatever, and then they'll go and just blow a fortune making these amazing camps and buildings and everything. And people just fundamentally want to give if we were allowed a system where that could flourish.
Or if they have any money left over after the government taxes the remaining spare cash. Now, Kevin Lawton has been my very special guest. This has been a very, very quick interview. His website is thecrowdfundingrevolution.com, and there is the Crowdfunding Revolution book banner on the homepage of the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. And also, just another reminder yet again, this is a predominantly listener supported broadcast, so please go to the homepage and subscribe today. Little regular donations are actually really good because it means I don't have to constantly beg for donations, especially towards the ends of particular periods where a whole lot of bills all come in at once. Have you ever noticed that, ladies and gentlemen, that whenever you think you've got spare money and you check your letterbox, it's a bad move, isn't it? Okay, Kevin, thank you very much for your time.
It's been an honor, man. Love being on your show.
And thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. We'll see you again next time.